You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff.
Something is wrong with me.
Practice. Welcome to a new installment of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. And please do. I'm lonely out there in Twitter land. Come on, talk to me. Tell me something. Tell me you actually listen to the show. This week's show is an interesting one of sorts. I am on location in beautiful suburbs of Quincy, Illinois. For those of you geographically challenged, look it up on a map. Unfortunately, my recorder must have gotten damaged in transition, and so I am fortunate enough, though, to be in an actual podcasting recording studio at Quincy University recording this, and I am able to do this because of my guest, Mr. Travis Yates, who I've worked with many years ago. I don't want to say many, because that sounds like so old, but it's been...
It's been about 12 years, my 12 friend, years, so that yeah. that constitutes many now. Well, thanks for having me, Chad.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for setting up this media empire here at Quincy University.
Yeah, it's a nice little hidden gem in the lower level.
No pun intended, in the Gem City.
In the Gem City, in the lower level of the North Campus building. So we are very tucked away, but yeah, nice little facility we've got.
Yeah, it makes me jealous and reminds me of when I was in college, and that's a good segue for what this topic is about, because Travis has been a college professor for the last 6 years.
10 years.
10 years? Yeah. See, time just gets away.
I don't know.
Where does it go? But we are discussing today a topic that has been on my mind quite a bit, I mean, especially lately, but even over the last few 10 years, that is college not necessary? And I say this with, I'll open up with the open background and complete honesty on my part, is I went to college right after high school because it was kind of expected. You just went to college, and I knew I was lazy and didn't want to get a job, and I also wasn't prepared to go out to LA right out of college. I was very introverted. I would have been eaten alive. It wasn't the right move. So I said, let's go to college and rack up student debt. But I was not a college-minded person, and I actually ended up kind of dropping out, or just I stopped going to class, and then they asked me, please don't come back anymore if you're not going to take this serious. But I got involved with a student television station, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. And so that's where I was spending all my time. And I have been fortunate enough that my post-college life, the careers that I've had, have been in the field that I wanted to do originally. But it's also stuff that once I got hired was like on-the-job training. I put in the extra time to master what I was doing. So for me, from my perspective, college... While I value education, and I think education is very important, I don't know if it needs to be a structured learning regimen. So that's where we're starting off with. So I guess before we get into this, Travis, do you have any thoughts you want to get out of the way first?
Sure. Well, my journey is very similar to yours, actually. I also attempted college right after high school because it was what you're supposed to do. I had an idea of what I wanted to do. I initially wanted to be a sports writer, so I did land in the genre, if you will, of media, but never did become a sports writer per se, but didn't know what I necessarily wanted to do, thought I did at 18, and didn't take it seriously and racked up unneeded debt as well. And it took me a long time. It ended up taking me 10 years to finish my undergraduate degree. So, you know, and now I'm a college professor. So certainly that 10-year plan,
it paid off.
It paid off, and it's certainly it's not anything that then will dictate where you ultimately end up. But I definitely think it's a valid argument of when and if college is right for you as an individual. And it's certainly not a blanket answer. It's going to depend on you as a person, and what you want to do.
Yes. I think if you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know, some type of highly skilled, trained professional, then yes, please go to college. I don't think, you know, John Hopkins hospital, or is that a hospital, just a university, or the Mayo Clinic. I don't think they're going to hire anybody just off the street being like, hey, I want to be a doctor. Yeah, come learn on, you know, here's a body.
Right. Operate. This is not a Holiday Inn Express commercial that we live in.
So, but I agree with you. It's, I think, especially, like you said, once you get out of high school, it's just the expected next step. And I know for a lot of people, if they don't do it right then life will get in the way and you may not make it back. And while your high school education is also fresh in your mind, keep the education going. But yeah, looking back now, I wish I would have taken a year or two off to really assess what I wanted to do.
And almost celebrate that as far as saying to our young high school graduates, it's okay to be in that place. For me personally, you know, 18 to 20 was one of the most confusing times of my life. And so to, you know, I'm always really impressed with my freshman students and sophomore students that are really put together just because, you know, 18, 19 years old, we're not supposed to be put together. Yeah. And so.
And especially college being your first time out on your own.
Like, sure.
I think I would say a lot of students also get trapped up in that, okay, I don't have someone watching over me. I don't have a curfew. I don't have rules necessarily that I need to live by. Some can handle it. And then there are some that kind of go off the deep end because it's freedom for the first time.
Absolutely. And, you know, colleges do try to prepare for this. I've seen it from the inside out where, you know, that's what your gen eds, as they're called, and many, we call them the Bonaventure program here at Quincy University, but you get all those general courses in that make you a well-rounded individual. And then what it's really meant to do is help you find those things that you're passionate about and what you do want to go do for the rest of your life. The problem is you're seeing, especially now with so many schools and so many programs hitting financial trouble, that programs are clamoring to get students early. And so, you know, by your junior year, that's when normally you would say, okay, I've got an idea now of what I want to do. I've got most of my gen eds out of the way. I'm going to go into this program. No, you have programs that are vying or setting up their structuring their programs where you need to get started as early as your freshman year. Wow. And so you're taking away oftentimes that opportunity to spend 2 years taking all those classes to figure out what it is you want to do.
Yeah, I was going to say the other option that I think more people seem to be going into is taking those first 2 years, your gen eds, and going to a community college because it's a lot cheaper. It's a more, I think the schedule is more conducive to if you want to have a job outside of work or outside of school. And then, like you said, you get those out of the way. And then when you get to college, you can focus on what you actually want to do, what you want to master. Yeah.
I actually did the community college route. I got my associate's degree and then ended up at Southern Illinois as well. And I enjoyed the diversity of students at the community college level. You had everything from your first-time learners, your freshman-level students, to the adult learners that are there either just for a single class or to also get their associates, but they're returning to school after years off. And you see that diversity somewhat in a four-year school, but not as much, and certainly not four-year institutions are catered to the 18 to 22-year-old demographic. That's just the way. That's just the reality. And so that diversity may not be as celebrated as much in a four-year structure as you see in a community college.
That's true. That's a good point. And I think that diversity is also important for the 18 to 20-year-old students because, yes, you can actually find student classmates that have life experience that can give you, you know, can be guidance, sort of a counselor, I don't know, just someone that can kind of give you life lessons.
Yes.
Whereas when you're in a four-year school where everyone is 18 to 22, you're just kind of amongst the same group and you're all learning together, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a difference and more opportunity.
You know, another issue that we haven't yet touched on is pushing people to college.
Yes.
Versus either taking time off or maybe not going to college at all, learning a trade, learning a skill set that you don't need, that, like you said earlier, you referenced getting on-the-job training that's just as valuable or more valuable for that career. and you know why we don't do that more. I know other countries do that. They maybe even in high school, they're preparing students for certain trades, and then they know when they get out of high school, they're not meant for college. They don't want to go to college. Mm-hmm. They're going to go, you know, learn this trade, learn this craft, and then do that, you know, for the rest of their life.
Yeah, there's, I believe it's a quote by Mike Rowe. If it's not him, I'm going to credit him anyway, because I know his philosophy is a lot of technical trade and, you know, getting people just training to do a job. But going along the same lines, it's, I mean, I've heard this a lot growing up, you're probably the same way, where when you see someone doing manual labor or doing a job that is not a glamorous college degree type job, you're always told, stay in school because you don't want to end up like that person. And the quote is, when you say something like that, you're not putting an emphasis on education, you're devaluing work. And I think that's a big issue in our society now, where we look at jobs as, if it's not glamorous, I don't want to do it because I don't actually want to work. I don't want to you don't want to be breaking your back 40 hours a week to live, you know, for a job that doesn't pay as well. But then again, you know, and this is another whole topic altogether, but this push for a higher minimum wage and livable wage, but we still need, it doesn't matter what, how much education people have, there are always going to be those people that are going to do those jobs. And to look down on those jobs, I think is it's a hindrance to society.
And I think it's a product of our society, as far as, you know, we are so obsessed, maybe even with status. Mm-hmm. And
there's real quick jumping in, because we always talk about the poor, and I've had this conversation with other friends, and there's a big difference between worldly poor and United States poor. United States poor means, oh, I have the iPhone 5, not the 7. I have a PlayStation 3, not the PlayStation 4.
Right. I tell my students sometimes the story of my poor days, quote, poor days in college. And they were lean days, mm-hmm. more than poor days. I had running water. I had electricity. I had a warm place to sleep at night. And so I certainly wasn't poor by any stretch of the means. Now, after all those bills were paid and those luxuries were taken care of, that was it for me. So I worked at a hotel when I was in school, and I would borrow without returning things from that were going to be set out for breakfast the next morning, bagels and things of that nature. And that would be my dinner, because I didn't have money for dinner. So they were lean days, but they certainly weren't poor. Like I said, I had I never slept out in the cold. I didn't, you know, so absolutely. That's a good reference of United States poor. Versus.
Yeah.
I think it's a major faux pas also for people to think, oh, if I go to college, I don't have to work, because mm-hmm. let's also not discredit a different kind of work, maybe that's not mm-hmm. manual labor, but the amount of work that's done in the, you know, white collar sector, I suppose you'd call it, but you know, the college educated jobs that are waiting there for you, there's still 60, 80 hour work weeks waiting for those people that want to climb the ladder.
Right. And that's something we were discussing a little bit before we started recording, is when I was working in reality television the last few years, now being out of school 20 years, I'm working with people. I would see, you know, new PAs, new hires that were fresh out of college. And you can just tell this, I think there has been a shift in mentality in working, in that they're going to take that bottom entry-level job because it's all they're going to be able to get. You're not going to come right out, unless you are the next Steven Spielberg, the next whatever. You're not going to come straight to L.A., and I'm using L.A. just because that's my environment, my work environment. You're not going to come straight out and become the next top dog. You're going to have to start out earning your stripes, and it's people who come with this expectation of, okay, I want to be a director. I want to be a producer. I don't want to be a PA. I don't want to do this. I'm only doing it because I have to. But I'm not going to put any extra effort into it because I know I'm not going to stay here for my entire career. And what they don't understand is how you move up is based on your work ethic at the bottom. Because if you're, you know, if you're a slacker, if you're just putting in the minimum effort, no one's going to want to move you up because you're not proving yourself that you're capable of handling more responsibility.
And this then leads to the bigger question of, you know, was our generation, because we are now, I think, a generation removed from your modern college student, you know, was our generation the last to have that work ethic that you need to, or almost not the work ethic, but the reality, understanding of the work ethic? You also hear, well, every generation says about the generation that comes after them, oh, right, you know, kids these days and this and that. But I've definitely seen a shift as well, as we had talked about in the last 10 years, of just the students' understanding of the work that it's going to take to succeed in college, and then also the expectations, because maybe not LA, but they also think, when I get out of here, I'm going to start in, you know, I teach future broadcasters. Mm-hmm. And they oftentimes think they're going to start in Chicago or New York, or even a top 50 is shooting, you know, for the skies straight out of school. And why, certainly, I never want to dampen anyone's dreams. Mm-hmm. I also have to smarten them up to how the business works, of how, you know, you will start at a small market, you will start working 12-hour days for peanuts, and you will cut your teeth doing that for several years, and then you will work your way up. By, you know, market size, and then eventually make it to one of those large markets. And, you know, they learn the hard way, and hopefully they look back and say, oh, yeah, Professor Yates was right.
Yeah, and I mean, this is probably another topic for another show, but where is that change in attitude in this generation? Is it because, you know, we look at our generation, like I said, my parents worked, both my parents worked 7 days a week. They had their regular Monday through Friday job, and they had part-time jobs on the weekend to support. Again, because we weren't, I mean, we were, by definition of today, poor, and I'm air-quoting that, which you can't see in podcasts, so I don't know why I do it, but we were poor, but we weren't poor. Like, I never went hungry. I never, you know, I had everything that I wanted. My parents had that work ethic. They instilled that work ethic into me, which I know sometimes I am guilty of not doing, because just because I understand how much work they had, and I'm like, I want to have fun also in life, but I understand the responsibility factor. And I think our generation, like, kids are not inherently going to be lazy or anything. It's what is being taught to them. And is it like the entitlement program of parents doing everything? You have helicopter parents now, which we didn't have. I mean, I'm sure you
were latchkey kids.
Yeah. We just left, and when we came home, we did whatever we wanted.
Fend for yourself,
yeah.
Right.
Are the parents to blame in this shift, and how did it get to be this way? I don't know.
Well, I do think that technology is playing a big role in it. I think that this instant gratification, and it's not just the kids, as we like to say. I think it's playing a role across society, both young and old, but I think that it's when referencing the shift in work ethic or understanding of what work ethic is, I think that that is playing a big role, of just when you have literally everything at your fingertips, how can you possibly understand what it means to have to really work to get anything? Little things in the education world of going into the library and tracking down a book through the card catalog system versus just, hey Siri, where is it at in my library? Bing, there it is. Siri, I thought you were talking to her.
Yeah.
You know, and so, again, not their fault, the product of the environment in which this is the generation that they're raised. And, you know, you referenced back to your parents' work ethic, and I think back to mine as well, and my grandparents' work ethic, which was even better than my parents in my eyes. So I do think there is a trickle-down just with ease of the things in our lives.
In society, you don't have, you know, you look at, going back to our grandparents' generation, cooking and cleaning were day-long chores. Now, especially with the microwave or, you know, the meal, prepackaged meal, everything is so simple.
Yeah.
Or simpler now. That, yes, I think that is a big thing where we have more time, and you always want to go for that kind of easy route at times.
I'm soft. I admit it. And I pride myself on a work ethic. And I say, in any job that I'm at, I may not be the smartest in this room, and I may not be the most talented in this room, but no one else in this room is going to outwork me.
Yeah.
And I attribute a lot of that to the success that I've had in my career. But like you had referenced, I also like to have fun. I also like, I have my...
You have to find that balance.
And finding the balance.
And that has been a key for me over the last 5-6 years.
And, you know, there was no Netflix. There wasn't even VCRs and VHSs for our, you know, parents a lot of their lives growing up. And so, you know, they didn't have that need or maybe want for the mindless entertainment or the tune out or, you know, whatever you call it. So I certainly think our generation was that first generation that had more than three channels to watch. And we don't have to go to the theater to watch a movie. We have this tape and now this DVD. And then now that's graduated to this generation of it's Netflix. I've got every movie imaginable at my fingertips. And I've got the world at the fingertips with the internet. And so, you know, there's...
And sadly, that is creating a very disposable society.
Yes.
And that's a whole nother topic we can share for a future episode. But yeah, it's nothing is earned anymore. And I think that's also another part of it is when you have to earn something, you respect it more. You know, I remember, I tell the story, when my family got their first VCR, I actually took out a loan. I bought the VCR.
Wow.
$300, which now you can buy them on eBay for like five.
It's probably huge.
Yeah, it was big thing. But it also lasted like 15 years.
Yes.
But, you know, there was that pride in, okay, I did this. I bought this. Now when everything is either handed or, like you said, going back to an educational aspect where when you don't have to go to the library and look things up, you can go to Google, Wikipedia, stuff that is right there. Someone else has already done all the work for you. How much value do you put in what you're learning?
Not much. Not much, because you didn't earn it. Yeah. Absolutely. Or you did, but with minimal effort versus really going out and searching for it.
And did you go above and beyond what was required, or did you hit the minimum? Okay, I need a 5-page paper with two sources. Boom. It's done.
You know, an interesting phenomenon now is what I'm seeing, at least at my school and with my graduates, is you had mentioned, well, I wasn't ready to go work, so I went to school.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of students that are graduating with their undergraduate degree and then going to grad school, not necessarily because they're passionate about education and want to continue honing their craft, but they're not ready for work. And I suppose kudos for them for realizing that. But I will say this also, because bring it all the way back full circle to the topic that we kind of veered off a little bit from, of this notion that college should be for everybody. It's an undergraduate degree now is the new high school diploma.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what I tell my students is, congratulations, you've got a bachelor's degree, you and everybody else. What are you going to do when you're in college that sets you apart from everybody else that also has that same piece of paper? Because it's the new high school diploma based on this notion
that
everybody goes. So really, the graduate degree is now becoming the new bachelor's degree, the master's degree is, because that's one way to set yourself apart is, here's a stack of applicants. Ooh, look at this one. They have a master's degree. Everyone else just has bachelors. So that's an interesting phenomenon that I think. So I do experience, for all of the press that institutions across the country are having, financially, the troubles that they're having, I do think that you'll see some growth in graduate schools over the next 5 years or so, because I think that it's a phenomenon that's not unique just to tiny Quincy University. I think that it's happening everywhere.
But then my question would be, okay, if you're not ready for work, so you're going on to grad school, you're also digging then a bigger debt hole to get out of once you get out of. And unfortunately, the salaries are not keeping up with the cost of college. Mm-hmm. So where is that balance of getting the education, but also not putting yourself so far behind in a financial strait when you get out that, you know, you're lost right out the gate?
The affordability of college is certainly something that needs to be addressed, especially, I by no means would call it a scam, but here we are pushing everyone and creating this false notion that everybody needs to go, and if you don't, you're a failure somehow, mm-hmm. which is just so wrong. But that's what's happening. And yet we're making it so unaffordable mm-hmm. that I know I'll be paying off my college debt for years. I'll probably own my home before I own my degree. Wow. And my wife has her doctorate. I have two masters, and so we've got a lot of schooling between us, and so we're both paying a lot. And that was years and years ago when we did that. So, you know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of welfare reform is always on the minds of politicians mm-hmm. and in the news. But, you know, let's also deal with the other end of the spectrum of college affordability reform, if you will, because we've got to find a way to not put these kids in unsurmountable debt. And that's just for undergrad. And then, if you throw the graduate school on top of that, it's so easy. It's so easy. And you put on top of that the fact that, you know, I know at big schools, it doesn't happen here at Quincy University, but at the larger schools, you know, you've got credit card companies putting applications in the hands of 18-year-olds that, like you said, tasting freedom for the first time. Sure, give me a credit card.
Like, oh, free shirt. Great. I could put off doing laundry one more day and not thinking about the
And then 2 weeks later, they have a credit card in their hand.
Yeah.
And so we need to prepare them for things like that as well in high school. So there is a lot that we could do at the high school level that could help with a lot of these issues.
Yeah, and that's an interesting part, because I've heard this brought up several times over the last few years, is that the high schools really aren't preparing for life. Like, mm-hmm. we're focusing on, you know, college classes. You know, I had chemistry, physics, mm-hmm. 4 years of higher math all the way up to, you know, calculus. None of that stuff I use in my day-to-day life, even though they told me in school I was going to use this every day.
Right.
But where is the, you know, managing a bank account, managing a credit card, understanding debt, understanding rollover, understanding
the FAFSA and what that's going to mean. Yeah, you're soon to be student debt. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Especially for kids going into college, like, look at what, you know, loans you're taking out for college. What are the interest rates? What is it going to mean when you get out, mm-hmm. and what position are you going to be in?
And that's where you can work in, I think, the value and appreciation of a trade, mm-hmm. what it could mean for you. You know, let's look at the scale here of the amount of student loan debt that you would have to take to go into career X, mm-hmm. versus starting out learning a trade and not putting yourself in any type of debt, mm-hmm. and then what you'd earn, you know, through the years that might still be comparable to what it is that you do with a college degree. Yeah. And, you know, and then let the students make an informed decision, or the students and the parents, because the mm-hmm. parents too are falling under this guise that everybody needs to go to college. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit, because I can't do a show without bringing a little bit of politics into things. But you look at college campuses these days too. You look at Berkeley, which has had riots over the last 2-3 months of the school year, when Milo Yiannopoulos, whatever his name is, was coming in, and then Ann Coulter's going to come in and speak, and organizations shut them down, refused to have them on campus. At the commencement speech at Notre Dame, when Vice President Pence was giving his speech, students got up and walked out in protest. Is college also fostering a idea of, instead of being a diverse and inclusive place, it's actually fostering single-minded, kind of a hive mentality? And I don't know if you see that much here in the Midwest, if it's, you know, but.
Well, you know, my take on it is that if there's anywhere in the country, if there's any space that we should be able to discuss all of these very complicated issues, mm-hmm. all of these hot button issues, but very important issues, it's at college, mm-hmm. and really it's in the college classroom. You'd like to have the discussion led by the appropriate people that are experts in their field and can guide the students along, and not influence, but guide them and keep them on track. I always welcome that. I encourage my students to talk about that, and as soon as it starts veering in a I don't want to say unsafe, but a direction that's
more personal.
That's more personal and less about the issues. Then I'll shut it down. Mm-hmm. You hate to see a riot of any kind, especially when it comes to things of this nature. So I think anytime you see that, personally, I feel like it's gone too far. That someone should have stepped in and helped mediate this situation. The Mike Pence situation, I thought the students actually handled it quite well for the way they just got up, they left, they didn't make a big scene. It was a big scene walking out of commencement, but they weren't, hooting and hollering. Yeah. It was still respectful to the graduates that wanted to mm-hmm. stay through the ceremony. And so every situation is different.
Right.
But I definitely think that the discourse in college is so important and paramount to the whole education of a student.
Yeah, to me, it's from all these different examples that you can look up and find, it seems like the thought of actual discussion isn't there anymore. It's got to be, this is how I feel. If you don't feel the same way, I want to keep you away because you're having it. And I don't understand that. I mean, I've said it many times on this podcast, and whenever I get guests on, I try to get someone with a different view, because if we're just sitting here agreeing the entire time, it's a very boring mm-hmm. conversation. Mm-hmm. But it's also that aspect of conversation is important. Discussion is important. Opposite views, because even though we may not agree, you want to hear why someone might think what they're thinking. And I think when you shut down an entire opposing voice, what are you learning?
This is my field, communication. And it's why I love it. And the minute we stop communicating is the minute we lose. Mm-hmm. Either side, both sides,
exactly.
All sides, because there's not just one or two sides.
No.
And these issues are so complicated that we have to continue talking about them too. If not, you're never going to come to an agreement. Everyone's not going to come to an agreement, but to at least better understand, mm-hmm. At least better comprehend some of the issues. I never thought of it from that perspective, mm-hmm. from what this person might be dealing with. I still don't agree with it, but I'm going to have a little bit more empathy for them.
Yeah.
And without communication, that doesn't exist. It can be internal. I don't know if you've ever been to therapy. I have. I think that everyone at some point should go to therapy. But one of my first therapy sessions, I got a lot out, and I walked out, and I was shaken physically. I wasn't shaking. I was shaken just kind of physically. And that feeling lasted probably the rest of the day. But the next day, the following weeks, I started to feel better and understand a lot of those. It was just getting those feelings out that first kind of had me off balance, off kilter. But that's a process. That was an internal communication. But it's the same thing goes. You having uncomfortable conversations mm-hmm. is good.
Yes.
It's not wrong.
As long as you can do them
civil.
Civil.
You won't learn anything if you're just yelling back and forth. Absolutely.
And but I think that is a big problem, especially in, and this will probably be another podcast too, but it's the discourse in society today is so, instead of listening, I believe it was on episode like 4 or 5 of this show that I talked about, like no one listens to hear. Everyone listens to know when to talk. And it's, you have to have that. Like you said, not everyone has the same experience, has the same background as you. So you don't know what someone else went through to shape their opinion. And if you don't listen to them, you're never going to know.
Absolutely.
But once you do actually hear them, like you said, you may not agree, but you might be able to understand better. And that understanding is the first step to not necessarily agreeing, but co-working or cohesiveness in any topic.
There seems to be a fallacy of if I even acknowledge this other viewpoint, that I'm condoning it, and that's not the case. It doesn't have to be like that.
Condoning, or if I acknowledge that they may have the opposite side might have a point, then my point is wrong.
Right.
And again, it's not necessarily that there is a right and wrong. It's just everything is not black and white. And unfortunately, our society is going to the two extremes.
And we can point the finger at a few elements, all communication field related. You look at social media and you have to lay the appropriate amount of blame there.
Because even though it's social media, there's no communication. I can throw something up on Facebook or on Twitter and walk away.
Right.
I don't have to have a discussion.
There is the media in general as the gatekeepers. And of course, you've got all the different accusations of, you know, well, you're conservative and you're liberal. And then uses and gratifications theory, if I'll drop a little knowledge on the audience, sure. And say, you know, this is the theory that we only turn to the voices that we want to hear. Yeah. And so if I'm conservative and I just want to hear conservative viewpoints, I'm turning into Fox News and I'm you know, gratifying myself because I'm getting the echo chamber of what
I want to hear.
And, you know, vice versa for liberal media. So, you know, there's a lot of different elements out there that are that forces at work here that are acting against us all coming together. And then from the political realm, you have to question, do they want us to be cohesive?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because once we become cohesive, there are certain people who will claim to want to foster unity, but in reality, they want to keep you apart because that's how they're making their money. That's how they're making their notoriety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we could come together in some sort of unification, not even over, our own, personal opinions, but on the political system, yeah, look out.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't want that, even though that seems to be the one thing these days that are starting to bring people back around, ironically, we don't agree on much, but we can agree.
On this aspect, yeah.
On this. You know, the sad thing is, and when you look at it from, because it does seem to boil down to, a lot of times, your political party is going to at least help feed your belief system. And, these are not issues where you can just say, well, here, this is the way I, believe because of, it's the Republican Party believes it because the Democrats believe it. And yet it seems like that's it. And, we've got we're dealing with complicated issues that, the spectrums are so wide.
And that's the thing, going back to the whole black or white aspect, the arguments are framed in such a way. It's like either you want universal health care where everyone can get help or you want people to die. And you're like, no, there's middle ground in there.
Right.
Either you want to build the wall and keep everybody out, or you want everybody in here and taking over. It's like, no, there's, I don't know why people are getting trapped into thinking it's X or Y.
Right.
It might be P or Q.
And this is where the communication comes in.
Yeah. That's where if you're not communicating.
Right.
You don't know.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And that seems to be every issue is, you're either way out here? At A or way over there at Z. And communication is the only way to solve it. And we have a clear problem with that right now. So I don't know what the answer is, but...
Is the answer college?
Ironically, as we say, but I do think that, that colleges and universities... This is the time to introduce those conversations. This is the time to introduce to especially that 18 to 22-year-old mind that it's why it's important to talk about it. You don't have to agree with everything, but it is important to try to look at it from all sides. And if we can introduce that and introduce it in a safe and mediated way, hopefully we can avoid, these future big riots when somebody shows up on campus that you don't like. Because, I'm not okay with that. I'm not on board with taking it to that extreme, regardless of what it is that we're, protesting against.
Okay. As we wind down, I have one, I guess, the big question for you. You have a 6-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
He turns 18. He comes to you. He says, Dad, I'm not going to college. I want to do something else. Do you support that decision, or do you steer him towards, and granted, this is 12 years in the future, who knows what college is going to be like at that time, but.
I support him as long as he has a plan then for that. Why don't you want to go to college? What is the plan? And then if the plan is solid, then I will 100% support it. If he says, well, I don't have a plan. Mm-hmm. I just know I don't want to go to college. I'm okay with that too, because as we said, sometimes you need some time yourself to figure it out. I expect to know him well enough to know that whatever he is going to decide at 18, if it's way off the mark, I'll try to guide him in the right direction. But, because it could be the opposite end of the spectrum. I don't foresee this, but he could say, I want to go to college. And he's not college material. And same thing. Well, why let him rack up
the debt,
$20,000 a year in debt? Or maybe he wants to go to college, but for something that he doesn't need to go to college for. Get that on-the-job training that... one of the things in television, you get a lot of on-the-job training. Yeah. And want you to have a college degree, obviously, and it's hard to get a foot in the door without it, but you can. Mm-hmm. So I very much, that we run our program here very much like a working television station, so they're getting the exact experience, and they know what they're going to get, and they're ready for it when they walk into a TV station for the first time.
And that's a good point to bring up, is a lot of companies will say, we want someone with a degree or whatever. And again, this is coming from my perspective, my cynical view of someone who has worked in the industry for 20 years now. Even if I had that degree, it's a 20-year-old degree. The industry that we work in has changed so much in that time that what good is that degree meaning to today? If I had that degree and then went off and did something totally unrelated, and then came back to television, like, well, I have a degree. I would have been completely lost by stepping into a job now, because it's not that the basics are the same, but even in the 10 years that I've been in Los Angeles, the way we do things on shows now is completely different than how we did it then. So what is that degree? Like you said, is that just separating you from, making a show seem like you have more ambition or more drive than someone who doesn't?
Yeah. And
how do employers really judge based on a piece of paper?
And maybe that's where the shift in thinking needs to start with the employers, who maybe are thinking, well, we have to start with college degree required, when that might not be the case for the position that they're trying to fill. And if we can take that requirement away and look at a person from a holistic point and look at their body of work, what other jobs have they done? What extracurricular things do they have on their resume that might make them a perfect candidate for the job, even though they don't have a college degree? There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of different factors involved of trying to sway this new mindset.
I was just getting ready to say, I think the whole, everything we've talked about comes down to one word, and that is mindset. And it's getting away from the way things have been done, because that's the way they've just been done, to what is the better approach moving forward?
You move around a lot in your job. I've moved around a lot in my television career. And that is one, and I'm sure you've dealt with it a lot too, in television, just by nature, I think. But one of the most nails on a chalkboard thing is when you ask why you do something, and it's because we always do it this way. This is the way it's always been done. That's just nails on a chalkboard. And that is not a way to operate under any fashion for any project, any job, any research, anything that you're doing should not be dictated by this is the way it's always been done. We'd still be doing silent films if we kept doing it the way.
Hey, at least they had stories. But yeah, I think the next 10 years are going to be an interesting time as everything keeps changing and evolving. I'm curious where college ends up, because is there going to be that tipping point also in college cost to where people just can't afford it? And so you see it.
You're seeing a proliferation of for-profit universities. Mm-hmm. You're seeing more and more 100% online programs crop up, which eliminates a big cost of room and board mm-hmm. and things of that nature. So absolutely, in 10 years, higher education will probably look much different than it does now, because the model that's being used right now is not working. And you're seeing that with the number of schools that are hit. I mean, now granted, it's Illinois, but it's not just Illinois. It's happening across the country. But Illinois, I mean, there have been layoffs, big layoffs. And our alma mater, SIU, mm-hmm. just made another big round of layoffs. The problem is, and I saw it up close and personal with Quincy University, that just dealt with their own financial issues this past 2 years. You can't cut your way to financial health. It is a structure that you have to have in place. And so the model itself will likely look much different in 10 years. Yeah. What that looks like, I have no idea. But what's happening now, the model, it's just outdated, I think. Mm-hmm. And
which I think is a lot of our society in general, mm-hmm. is things have not kept up with technology. And so it changes everything.
I mean, you look at a lot of the different mindsets, and again, not to take it in a political area, but you know, when we're focusing on bringing back coal, and the rest of the world is moving on to renewable energies, yeah. and that's where a lot of the, you know, emerging technology and jobs are.
You have to evolve with the time.
You have to evolve.
Yeah, you're not going to bring back. We're not going to go back to the way things used to be 50 years ago, much less 20, 30 years.
Right.
It's just not. You have to keep moving forward.
You know, one of the things you had mentioned earlier that I didn't popped up into my head was the debate over intelligence, and you know that old adage of who's smarter, my doctor or my mechanic.
Yeah.
And you know, a doctor who went to school for, you know, multiple years versus a mechanic who has his own or her own training, but didn't necessarily go to your traditional four-year college for it. So who's smarter?
Yeah.
I'm not trusting my doctor with my car, and I'm not trusting my body with my mechanic.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't make either one of them more or less intelligent.
But if you just ask somebody, there's going to be more emphasis put on the doctor probably than the mechanic, but which one do you actually use more of in your day-to-day life?
Absolutely.
Well, and I was just going to say, going back to a comment you had made about not being the smartest person in the room when you're working or whatever, I've always heard the quote, if you're ever in a room and you're the smartest, you're in the wrong room, because you're not going to learn anything in that room.
That's great. Yes. You know, another piece of advice I always give to my students is find a mentor. And you can't find a mentor if you're the smartest one in the room, obviously. But I've been blessed with some wonderful colleagues and some wonderful mentors along the way. And so always, regardless of where you are or what you're doing or what you're trying to learn or master, you know, finding that mentor to help guide you on that path is always great.
So. True words. All right. Well, Travis, thank you for joining the show this week. Do you have anything you want to plug? Media, social media, websites?
Yeah, you can visit my website, traviscyates.com. You can see some research that I've done on film and television. Some of my recent films, short films, are on there. So, yeah, if you want to know more about me, that's where I exist online.
And you're getting ready to leave Quincy University and move into a whole other realm. So we'll keep listeners updated if they want to take classes with you in the future, where they can go.
That's right. And yeah, I'll continue with teaching at Quincy University, at least for the next year or so, online, which I love, online classes. And so I'm looking forward to that challenge. And yeah, I'll continue teaching in multiple realms in the future. So,
all right. Well, thank you for joining us, Travis.
Thank you for listening.
This episode of Positive Cynicism. Again, you can find me on Twitter at ChatSmart. If you have thoughts on education and college, let me know. And as I say on most shows, it's all about questioning everything, doing something. Again, thank you for listening, and check out the other shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.